Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our draft countdown series. Tonight, we're talking the interior defensive lineman and doing so with our friend Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing?
Hey, Ken. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me to talk about the pretty interesting group of players.
My pleasure as always, Gabe. You know, I love to talk football with you during the regular season. You're one of the people we have on most regularly, obviously, and all sorts of off-season content. Just appreciate your willingness to come on this show and share your thoughts with us as often as you do. Let's start a little bit with the Ravens' current situation, though, in the interior defensive line that I think is an interesting one. They had five players take every snap this past season. They have the same five players against all odds coming back to play the 2024 season, when a year ago at this time, they only had one guy under contract, and that was Travis Jones.
Yeah, definitely an interesting situation because it's a veteran group. And that's not somewhere that the Ravens have really always been in a lot of defensive positions. So, a couple of the guys that were just signed this past year, Broderick Washington, and then obviously Justin Madubuike, big time players, I think, especially Madubuike. Washington's been a good, rotational contributor over the time. So you have them locked up for a couple of years now. And then you have Travis Jones, you mentioned about, who's the younger guy. So I think there's room to potentially get a couple of depth pieces. They have vets that are probably on their way out in the next year or two. And then that's where you're trying to build up and get younger at that position.
I mean, I would agree. It's not generally a healthy thing to be as old as the Ravens are and have so many guys playing at market value contracts, even though one of them is Brent Urban, who's playing at a very reasonable market value. The rest of the players, Pierce is a mid-ticket number, very good player, but a mid-ticket number. Broderick Washington is making, I believe, more than Pierce is now, yes. Although it might be close. And then Travis Jones, of course, is still in his rookie deal, but at some point they'll have to make a decision on him, and they want to be of clear mind what they want to do with Madubuike under contract and Jones coming up on his fifth season. Actually, when he comes up on his fourth season, they're really going to have to make a decision on extending him probably at that point.
Yeah, I think the important thing is you have your kind of cornerstone player in Justin Madubuike. He's the guy who got the basically top of the market contract. I think it was a deserved contract. A couple of days later, Christian Wilkins goes and gets, $15 million more on the open market. So I think the Ravens did a good job of getting, Justin at the price that they did. You definitely need to have more than one defensive tackle on your team, and you want to have, players that can come in and rotate. Ideally, players that might be scheme and position versatile. That's something that I think we're going to be talking a little bit about, is kind of the differences and the different types of, techniques and things you play at defensive tackle. And Justin Madubuike is really kind of like that one position. He's your traditional three tech. He can play a little bit out over the tackle as well, but, he's not giving you a lot of the interior kind of like clogging as some of the other players that you want, like your Michael Pierce, for instance. So I think you want players that you can build around him. Ideally, that's what you're looking for.
Great mix of body types that the Ravens have for stopping the run. They have Urban, who's a, hold them off two gapping five tech. They have Pierce, who's a I'm not going anywhere nose tackle. The one area where maybe they could use a little help is getting a three tech who plays more against the run. They could put Jones there with Pierce. That would be a absolutely dominating a combination, I think. But I think they're more or less set with the guys they have against the run. But what's really impressive about this group is the Ravens were not, it wasn't like they had the personnel to do it really at all during the year. but they when they had three outside linebackers who could rush the passer effectively, they still did not put them on the field. They did for a few snaps, but very few relative to past years where they played a lot of rush nickel, one down lineman, three outside linebackers, and you know a nickel defense behind that. It's a very unusual position the Ravens have, that they have three good interior pass rushers they can rotate through with Pierce, Jones, and Madubuike.
Yeah, and you know it's going to be interesting. The Ravens have continued to, unfortunately, have to turn over their defensive coordinator position. So you never know for sure, you know, the type of way that Zach Orr is going to look at, you know, the defensive tackle rotation, how much he's going to potentially kick in defensive ends, outside linebackers, do more of the race car type approach, or if he's going to be kind of the same way that Mike McDonald was doing in the past couple of years. So I think we'll have to wait and see exactly. And it may just be depending on what personnel he has available to him. He'll play them in the roles that he thinks is best fitting their skill sets.
It's going to be very interesting because one of the big questions, of course, is whether Zach Orr is going to maintain the Ravens as a committed nickel team, with, you know, Simpson being a replacement for Queen. But, you know, we still don't know a whole lot about Trenton Simpson, in my opinion. I mean, we've seen Patrick Queen play. We kind of knew who he was after a series of years, knew his strengths and weaknesses. I don't think we really know whether Trenton Simpson is going to be, you know, a great pass rusher, a good pursuing, trailing run defender, whether he's going to really be a cover guy or whatnot. And I think that leaves open a lot of potential variation at that weak side spot, whether it's on early downs or on late downs.
Yeah, I think we'll just have to kind of wait and see how things unfold and what type of player he is. And then I think, you know, because we know what the Ravens defensive tackle class or group, I should say, looked like last year, we kind of know what they're capable of. And we know that you can have some strength up there and some size up there if you want to kind of allow yourself to play more like two high safety, for example, so you don't have to necessarily bring up an extra safety to stop the run, because they have the guys who can do that, which gives them a lot of flexibility in the way that they can scheme up their different, you know, coverages, which is a nice benefit to have in today's NFL.
Now, the Ravens have made 25 picks in the last three seasons, and this is coming off COVID, when some defensive linemen were staying in an extra year and then coming out and whatnot. Only one interior defensive lineman drafted that entire time. That was Travis Jones, of course. We talked about a little bit youth. Now, obviously, for any additional defensive lineman to come in, something kind of has to happen between an injury, an IR, draft and stash situation with a player, or maybe they just carry six defensive linemen this year and go short somewhere else, which always is a difficult thing to do because they usually carry five. How do you see this breaking out for this roster? You think they're likely to draft a defensive lineman this year, but maybe put a percentage chance on it?
I think it's probably not where they're going to be like looking necessarily. If they have the option between a few players, they might go in a different direction. But, you know, I think if something like a Travis Jones falling to the third round mm-hmm. happens again, I think they would pull the trigger and take a player that they probably have graded, you know, maybe as like a second, or, you know, maybe even the back end of a first round grade who just falls because of the position they're playing or because of other positions being pushed up the draft board. So I would say less than 50%, probably closer to like a third, like 33% chance. But I don't think they're going to like take the position off the draft board by any stretch. You know, as they do need to get younger, I think, at that position. And you never know, you know, a guy like Brent Urban, like, he's not signed to a big deal. I know they love him. He's a great guy, but he might be someone who could potentially fall off the roster if they need to bring in someone else in that position.
Yeah. And you know, maybe Brent is even the kind of guy who could be okay waiting for his turn on the practice squad. The Ravens certainly have a lot of those. And it's not where you want to be as an 11th year player, but you know, maybe it's something that would work. I'm with you in the fact that all position groups, I've set my list, and I want to give you a chance to say how you built your list here, but I've set my list in terms of the round that I think the player would have value to the Ravens. With a round, people will say you're never going to get the player in that round. And the point of that is I'm not doing needs-based drafting. I'm doing value-based drafting. So I'm trying to figure out where would that player represent kind of too much value for the Ravens to pass up on, regardless of their positional needs. And I think for the defensive line, I still come out with some pretty reasonable round numbers in terms of the possibility of them really getting them. So we'll go through that a little bit today as we go. But I did want to hear, how did you make your list? Was it relative to the Ravens or by some other method?
Yeah, so I didn't so much look at in terms of exactly what the Ravens need from like the position. And let me take a quick step back and say the defensive tackle position is a unique position, I think, in the draft, because you have multiple different types of roles in between the position. You have your more of your traditional nose tackle, like two gap type of, you know, taking on double teams, run defender. And then you have your kind of three technique, pass rush, shooting the gaps, you know, more athletic, kind of the pass rush prototype for them. And then you also have, you know, the five technique, who's kind of like the length, defensive end / defensive tackle, your Brent Urban, your Calais Campbell, those types. So I think, you know, the Ravens have kind of moved away from needing that five technique type player on their roster. So they're more just kind of playing the defensive tackle, nose tackle types. But for me, I think that the Ravens kind of need both, because if something were to happen to Justin Madubuike, you really don't have much of a pass rush in that position other than him. Yes, Travis Jones has shown flashes. You know, Michael Pierce has shown flashes, but neither one of those guys is going to give you the type of play that Madubuike has. So I think you kind of do need someone who could be like taking some snaps from him, or like rotating, or if something were to happen from an injury perspective, someone who could come in and fill that role. Because honestly, I don't really see that on the position or on the roster right now.
Right now, it'd be Travis Jones. Side,
yeah, it would be Travis Jones if push came to shove, if there was nobody else on the roster. The nose tackle type, you know, Michael Pierce, he's also, you know, kind of a little bit in his own class there. I think Travis Jones fits more into that type of player than the three technique personally. I think he has the versatility to play both, but he's more of a powerful kind of run stopper than like a quick, you know, first step, you know, be able to like win at the point of attack in the pass rush. So I think from that perspective, you want someone who can come in and kind of like plug and play, just kind of be someone who can eat up space. You don't necessarily need to have the athletic floor or even the athletic ceiling. The other side is a much more like specific player who wins with quickness, who wins with athleticism, who wins with technique. It's a harder player to find a lot of the time. And that's kind of the position that I was a little bit more interested in this draft class, because I think short-term and long-term, that's a position that the Ravens could use more of on their team. It's also generally harder to find. It's a much more difficult type player to find in the draft in the NFL, and those are the kind of players that really are difference makers against the pass.
But definitely have some in this class who fit that mold of smaller guys in particular, who are you know, impactful pass rushers, in particular in the top 10. I think it probably becomes a lot more scarce as you get down the, you know, top 25 or something of the interior defensive linemen. I will say my list was made for the Ravens, so I specifically looked at certain characteristics. And one of the things, even though the ability is rare, I kind of discounted the value of some players who were interior pass rush specialists, because I think the Ravens are already fairly set there. And an interior run specialist, different situation. The Ravens are actually, you know, they're okay there, but I don't think they're perfect. If you're looking for another different body type, maybe with some additional length, I was interested in that. But interior pass rush specialists particularly, I was less excited by in this group. And I think there's some significantly overhyped players on the defensive line in this draft that we'll talk about as we go through. But anyway, I guess we'll get right to it. And anything else you want to say before we get started and give us your number 10?
No, I understand, you know, your perspective about that. And I think that makes sense for what the Ravens probably need, you know, in the coming draft. But I always think, you know, if you can find a player like that, and especially if you're not picking them in like the first or second round, you know, finding a guy like Justin Madubuike in a third round, mm-hmm. you can develop over a couple of years. That's really that's really something that's incredibly valuable in my opinion. So I think I tend to lead in the other direction than you. So we're probably going to get a little bit of, you know, opposing player profiles here. But and to that point, my number 10 is probably somebody that a lot of people would have higher. I have him low, and this isn't even impacting some of the recent news about him, but it's Tavondre Sweat out of Texas. There's a couple of reasons why I have him at this position. One is because I think he's actually a little too big. I get the Mount Cody vibe from him a little bit, which brings back some, you know, bad memories about a player who can't stay in shape, who's injury prone, who, you know, is on and off the field, can't stay, you know, in for an entire series, that kind of thing. I think he's probably a little bit better of an athlete. But the fact that he, you know, weighs in at the combine at 366, that's a huge number. And he is athletic for his size, but I'm just a little bit concerned about that. And to me personally, I think there are other players in this draft class who could be had at a lower draft slot and still give kind of the same role as him. So that's why I kind of moved him down to this spot. But I mean, he is impressive. What he can do, you know, against the run, you know, he's a very, very impressive player. He's big. He can move well for his size. He's got a little bit of pass rush juice to him, which you like to see out of someone that size. But I just don't see him as someone who's going to be affecting the NFL game as much as he might be able to dominate in the college game.
That's fair. I had him at number 6. Mount Cody is the player who immediately comes to mind when you see Tavondre Sweat. What kind of takes me a little bit away from that is the fact that they really tried at Texas to get Sweat matched up on a guard by himself by playing him at 3-tech with Byron Murphy, who's a much smaller player and also on our list here, I'm sure, in at nose. And first of all, try and block those two guys up, will you? It's obviously Sweat, I think, probably benefited more from the fact that he was at the 3 and playing alongside Murphy than vice versa, but they both benefited. No doubt about it, they both benefited from this. Sweat has, as you mentioned, all that block out the sun size. The 44 tackles with only 4 missed tackles in 2023 is just simply outstanding. First of all, I did the median is this year, and you have to get a little bit careful with this because PFF may change their standard from year to year over missed tackle rates. So even though I've quoted some career missed tackle rates, you can't take the 2023 missed tackle rate that I'm going to say in a second as necessarily the median for all 4 years that these players have played. So I think that comes into play. And I've noticed an increase in that rate. So is 11.8% was the median rate of guys who played half of the defense, half of the most defensive snaps. So that's a really good smattering of about, I want to say it's about 225 players or thereabouts. And it's number 112, 113 of that group. So anyway, 11.8 is the average. He was at 8.3%. In 2023. He's an extremely productive tackler. That those 44 tackles are a lot for an interior defensive lineman. Doesn't matter whether you're a 3, a nose, whatever. They just don't make as many tackles in today's game. And Tavondre Sweat made a lot of tackles. 10% pressure rate is still outstanding from the inside, even for a 3-tech where there are some guys who can really get after the pass rusher, and there are certainly some higher rates in this group. That rate is good. Terrence Cody was not nearly as consistent either as a tackler or as a pressure guy at Alabama, so definitely some things, and I mean over his career there. One of the questions about Sweat would be, can he really handle even an NFL rotational snap count? I did have that question come up about Jordan Davis last year, but I think he's a guy who has shown that he can take an increase in snaps every year at Texas. And that is a pretty good indicator from a positive standpoint. I don't think he makes sense for the Ravens after all that. They've got interior pass rush and they've got big interior guys already kind of covered with the combination of Jones and Pierce. Then again, there is a point at which he drops, which you just cannot say no to him. I think certainly if he dropped into round 4 based on either any off-field stuff or the concerns over his weight, and he showed up at the combine, but then he didn't do much in the way of testing. They measured him and whatnot. And I think he might have done some jumps, which were not impressive, and he didn't do anything else, and he did not bench, which is really notable, by the way. That's a very bad sign in a player that size that they're not trying to bench. He's 23 in July, despite 5 years of college experience. And by the way, that's kind of young for the defensive line prospects. A lot of them are already 24. We're going to get through that. And a couple of them are younger, and we'll talk about that as well. But I think he's still a pretty good prospect. I think if he dropped into round four, I think the Ravens have to be very seriously considering it.
Yeah, I think he would have to drop to round four. I think there might be, a couple of players that were probably going to talk about in upcoming that, the Ravens would maybe consider as early as round three, potentially round two, probably not. But I think, yeah, he's someone who would have to, take a pretty big plummet. And, I don't want to get into off the field, but there are some things about him that are concerning that might cause that to happen. So then it's a question, is he completely off teams' boards? Is he someone that you, if you get to a certain point, you're like, okay, we can't not do it. And I think every player at some point, crosses that threshold, unless there's severe medical risk.
I think, a lot of the guys that have been blacked out in the past, Arthur Jones is the big one for the Ravens that they ended up drafting out of Syracuse, was a guy who had significant injury concerns, and they drafted him anyway in the fifth round. He just dropped far enough, and, he was apparently off a lot of other teams' boards. But you'll see this is that other teams, they don't have the same kind of wariness about the minefields of off-field concerns or of injury concerns for that matter. So I think it's possible the Ravens could draft him. If it was only some sort of injury concern, then I think certainly there's a round at which he can come back. If it's an off-field concern, it could be that they've interviewed the guy and they already think there's no way we can get this guy to take his health seriously. There's no way we can get him to practice regularly. He's gotten by on size, and there could be a situation like that where they'll black out a player and there's just no way they're gonna draft it.
Yep.
All right, so that's my number six guy and your number 10 guy. All right, we got some good variation happening right off the bat. Let's go down to my number 10 guy, who is Dwayne Carter of Duke. I'll get out of my notes on him just for a second. 6'2", 302, 33-inch arms. He'll be 24 in December. That's kind of on the outside of where I really like to draft someone who hasn't obviously shown grown man strength, and that was a problem with Carter. His testing is kind of met across the board, and he has no bench, which is a real red flag for older players. You got to have a grown man body if you're going to be 24 coming into the league, and we better be able to see it in some sort of bench rep number that makes sense. And I think, if you don't bench at that point, you're probably 18 to 20, 22 reps, and your agent tells you don't do it. You're going to cost yourself money, and a good chance that would come up. He has a fairly significant missed tackle problem that may take him off the board for the Ravens as well. 12 missed tackles, 26.7% versus just 19 stops this last year. That's 19 defensive wins there. That's not a good relationship between those two numbers. It's like walk strikeout ratio for a pitcher. You really want to have several times the number of missed tackles you have in terms of defensive wins, defensive stops there. So that wasn't good, but he does get solid and very regular pressure. The Notre Dame game in particular had six pressures in that game. Both guards had trouble with him. He's a very slippery dude. Effective bull rush, also has some nice half man moves where, I'll explain this because I don't know if I've done this so far on the edge or whatever, but when I say bull rush, you rush directly into the chest of the opponent. All other moves that are pass rushing effectively are half man moves where you either are trying to beat a player to one side, therefore attacking one half of his body, or even come back and counter against an overreaction to that side. So that's a half man move, as I learned it anyway. He's quite effective under on stunts, and you can see that on some of the film out there of him. And he looks like a whistle to whistle defender. I think, he's going to come in. If he would be with the Ravens, he would be a rotational player. They'd obviously have some stuff they have to work on and fix. I think he's a guy who sits for a year, basically doesn't get very much playing time at all As he grows into his body, if he does help the Ravens at all, it would be as a rotational pass rusher coming in towards the end of the year, if they had injuries or something. I think otherwise he might be a guy you put on IR to start the season with the thought that you might bring him back as a designated to return at some point. So they get a couple guys now this year that are automatically in that group, which kind of pisses me off that the Ravens system has been, polluted like that, but it is what it is. So I liked him enough to have him at number 10 on my list. I realize there are things that may make him undraftable by the Ravens.
So I think that this is where we start to see the divergence happen, because I actually had him switch with you with the number 6 spot. So I had him at okay. 6, mostly because, and I'm also going to disagree, I think he's a plug and play player. I think he can be someone who's like a 6, 7, 8 year starter in the NFL, who's going to be someone who has a lot of the kind of traits that I see with, defensive tackles that stick around the league. I think he's a good pass rusher. He's not like elite in terms of his quickness or his athleticism, but the bull rush, I've seen quite a few reps against tackles, against guards, against centers. He doesn't have super long arms, but he has long-ish arms. I think that's something that this class lacked a little bit. There are some players that I think, are kind of limited there. And I think that helps him. He isn't long in terms of like his size. I think 6'2", is that his height?
6'2", 302, 33 inch arms.
Yeah. So I think those are good. Those kind of meet your thresholds for mm-hmm. like your defensive tackle position. In a class, I think there's quite a number of undersized players. I think he kind of meets those well. And, one of the things that I kind of weight more so than maybe I should, but this is based off of just historical value coming out of the Senior Bowl. He played really well in the Senior Bowl, in the practices that week, in the one-on-ones, in the actual game. I think he's someone who really stood out. And to your point, he is older. He's 23. He's going to be 24. So you'd expect him to kind of do that. But I think, he's a player who plays hard every single time, through the whistle. Like he's always going to give that effort. I think that's something that the Ravens always look for in players. Yeah. And so to me, he's someone who I think is probably going to go a little bit higher than like maybe his profile would suggest, because of some of those intangibles. I think two-time captain is something that, teams look at as well. There's a lot of kind of intangibles that I think will cause him to go a little bit higher than might be expected based off of, the traditional profile.
Where is your value spot for him for the Ravens?
I think for me, he's a third round player. I would have a third round grade on him. And if he's there at the back end of the third, close to the top 100 player, I think that's where you would take him. He's not someone I'll go for before that. But, for instance, if we're in the third round and you have him and Sweat on the board, I'm taking Carter personally, because I think he just offers more in terms of the pass rush upside. I think he's someone who can be someone who's on the field and giving more on a consistent snap-to-snap basis. So that's why I like him in that spot.
Okay. Well, fair enough. We had our 10 and sixes, our swap there. Yep. My value spot for Dwayne Carter, definitely in the fourth round. If he's there late in the fourth round in particular, I'm loving that from a value perspective. I think that's terrific value. If they picked him in the third round, I think it'd actually be kind of a reach, and I'd be really questioning what else did they not pick at the need positions. Who did they not take to take Carter, who overlaps with some of the things that they already have on the team in terms of a pass rusher from the interior. And he is one of the guys, by the way, I dropped for that exact reason.
Hmm. Yeah, I can understand that. I think he's if I'm comparing him to a player that's currently on the team, I would say he's kind of a Broderick Washington type. Mm-hmm. I think he's a little bit versatile in what he can do. I think he's a little bit more athletic, a little bit more pass rush upside, but that's the kind of role I could see him playing on the team. So, and to your point, that's not necessarily something that they need. But I think, I like him for the reasons I described. So I wouldn't be upset with him in the third. I think that there's probably better options at other more valuable positions. It would have to depend on how the board looked at that point.
Sure. Okay, your number nine guy.
So my number nine is Chris Jenkins out of Michigan. In some ways, a player that I think doesn't play up to his potential in college, which is why I have him this low, because I think his physical profile is a little bit more impressive than some of the other players who are, I'm probably going to mention, like, coming up. I would say probably more so than Carter, who I just talked about, in terms of physical specimen. I think he's someone who has more, but on a very, very loaded defensive Michigan team, he didn't really flash that much. And maybe that was the kind of the role he was asked to play in the team, but I didn't really see the pass rush upside as consistently as I'd like to. He doesn't have incredible size. You know, I think he's probably around the same size. I think he's like a
6'3", 299, 34 inch arms.
Okay. So he does kind of have that, you know, that prototypical defensive tackle. I feel like he was probably asked to be a little bit more kind of run defense focused when he was playing in Michigan. And I think he's good in that role. I think he has good pursuit. I think he moves well for his size. I just would like to see a little bit more pass rush juice. And that's why I have him at this position, because I think this is going to be a theme. I like having players at the defensive tackle position who have the pass rush upside. And I don't see that as much with him. I think he's someone who will have to develop that as he gets into the NFL, because he doesn't have the moves, I don't think. He doesn't really have a pass rush plan. He has some of the athleticism. I think I can get him there, but it's going to take some time. So for me, I'd say fourth round grade.
Okay, fair enough. Now, another big variation here, because I absolutely love Chris Jenkins. And I got to say, I did not expect to coming into this review process. And I really took time. And then I looked at the film, and the guy is just there. There are things about him that are really special. And his athletic profile is very, very special. He's got 34 inch arms and he did 29 bench reps. That is an unbelievable combination. Throw in with that, he's only 22. Okay, he won't even turn 23 until October. So he's one of the younger guys in the entire defensive line group. Not quite the youngest, but he's one of the younger guys in the entire group. That is a very special combination. When you look at 29 bench reps, and I see a guy who did it with 31 inch arms or 31 and a half inch arms, and I think there's somebody else who was close to that, it ain't the same thing at all. It's a lot harder to do that with 34 inch arms. We had Josh Reed on explaining that. If you guys want to go back and listen to the Edge show, the Edge countdown, Josh does a very good job as a former power lifter himself of explaining, you know, why the bench is so hard to get started initially with longer arms. It includes different grip points on the bar and whatnot, how that affects leverage, all sorts of things. So it was a good explanation that I don't want to try and replicate for him. I'd rather you go back and download that pod. But anyway, that's a very special combination. And he's often cited as being a very strong player in the draft, whether or not whether he's got Voorhees strength, for example, or not is another question. But 34 inch arms are really exceptional. That's probably worth 35 reps for a 32 inch arm guy. So, it's a very, very strong player. What I noticed on the tape was a few things. Watch the Alabama game. If you want to see a guy who gets an unbelievable amount of attention from the offensive line. And I mean, there's multiple guys trying to block him on every play, usually because he's very active and kind of roaming the line of scrimmage to find a gap. Stunts, a high percentage of the snaps end up being stunts there. And he can be a great stunt over player or an under player because he's got good quickness on it. But I think because he really understands leverage at a high level, and that's very apparent in his run defense. Get to that in a second. I think he'd be a great stunt under player at the NFL level with the combination of strength, the ability to make some half man moves and get in there. So I was very positive on that. Just two missed tackles the entire season, 5.3%. That was great. I think he plays larger than his weight versus the run, which is important for a guy who weighs 299, you know, not be overpowered at the line of scrimmage. And one of the things that's pointed out is a corkscrew move that he makes. Now, you can go out there. There's good videos on the corkscrew move and whatnot. But it's when you're being double teamed, effectively, you reduce your surface area relative to the off player. So if you're in a one technique, that usually means the guard on the outside. You kind of lean your shoulder into that while you go to one knee. and push hard on the near side of the center, let's say, in this particular case. And what you're trying to do is create a gap between those two players that can then be exploited. Usually, as soon as the guard can't get onto that block, he'll probably give up on it and move to level two or take another available block at that point, which often leaves you in a position where you can constrain or bifurcate the backfield in some way and make the running back hopefully make a bad choice with relation to the space he has. I saw that a fair amount from Jenkins as being a guy who was in the backfield forcing running backs to make bad choices, and that's the guy I want. Doesn't always make the tackle. His tackle total was not outrageous, despite the fact, like Tavondre Sweat's is, for example, despite the fact he only had only two missed tackles. But he's very good about impacting run plays. And I think we've seen that from Michael Pierce, for example, as being a guy who gets in the backfield, doesn't necessarily make a ton of tackles, but he certainly makes a lot of opportunity for other defenders in there for the Ravens. Decent pressure rate overall.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
He had 4.5 sacks in 4 years at Michigan, so he's not a finisher. I think some of the things you said are right on the money about him as a pass rush. He definitely is not a polished defender in terms of having a secondary move or a counter move, but that's where Chuck Smith comes in. And boy, wouldn't that be cool, you know, to really have him develop some things at the NFL level, because he is a very polished run defender. And I think he's very polished in terms of technique, and he's had to be to play at a high level in Michigan and hold his ground. I think he'd be a value pick for the Ravens at the end of round two. And he's about one of the only guys that I would say that about in this draft that I'd be actually happy if the Ravens drafted him. Other guys that, you know, I'd be like, really, round two defensive lineman? Why are you doing this? He needs a cornerback, wide receiver, offensive tackle. Wasn't there anybody? And here's my list of other guys who I would have taken ahead of him. And I may be at that point, you know, when the Ravens draft wherever they are in the mid 60s and the 60s, that may not be the right time to take Chris Jenkins because someone else is on the board, but be a thrilling pick in round three if he made it that far, even if it's just a small trade down to say the Matabike area around number 71, if they were able to get him there. But I really love Chris Jenkins, and he's number four on my list, I believe. So difference there.
Yeah, I mean, I understand, I think, where you're coming from with him, because I think athletically, physically, I think he has a lot of the traits that you look for from that position. I'd like to see a little bit more pass rush prowess for someone I'm taking in the top three rounds at the defensive tackle position. That's kind of like my kind of baseline for that. So it's a little bit of a projection for me with him, which is why, you know, I have him and guys like Sweat a little bit lower, just because I don't see that at this point as a consistent, you know, part of their game. I think it's something that's going to have to be developed. And to your point, it very well could be, and that could be end up being like a home run pick if it comes. So I understand. I think he's kind of like that moldable clay ball that you could potentially turn into a very, very talented NFL player. So I like the upside with him. I think right now he's more of just the really good run defensive player. And to me, that has limited upside, but there is athletic potential for him to reach a higher goal for sure.
Right. Okay. We're ready to move on to my number nine guy then, I guess. We're moving real quickly. This is the way it always goes. So we have a lot of differences at the bottom of the list, and then we cut it off and we go really quickly through the top of the list. You'll see, because there's a lot of similarities. My number nine guy is McKinley Jackson of Texas A&M. Another guy I didn't really think I was going to love looking at him. 6'2", 326, a very big guy, almost 34-inch arms, 33 7/8. If you look at the guy on the field, he looks like Kelly Gregg a little bit, a disproportionate legs and trunk. Some of it's the size of his rear end. Some of it may be how high he wears his pants. And some of it, maybe the fact that he's only 6'2 and he has like kind of freakishly long arms, which is not at all Kelly Gregg. Like Kelly Gregg had very short arms as well. But he's just a fire hydrant kind of a player. And I found myself enjoying watching him play. And I saw some of the same things I saw with Chris Jenkins, by the way, in terms of a guy who drew all kinds of attention. I think that's true for a lot of the top 10, by the way. A lot of the top 10 ended up being guys that moved around the line a lot and were matched up on. And Jackson is in this group of a guy who moved around a little bit. And you know, the other team was always conscious of where he was and tried to scheme up to get him. And they had, you know, the wherever the bubble was, the guard bubble, that guard was highly conscious of Jackson first as the opportunity to move in and take either the A or the B gap next to him. So that really showed up a lot. I watched the film versus Auburn. He drew an offensive hold on the left guard. He moved around. He was at 3-1, and obviously Texas A&M trying to show a little bit of a different look. Really nice penetration for this versus the center on one play. Nice forcing the running back to choose. He had a share of an initial pressure. And then, you know, the one thing that really showed up is his motor is very consistent. He's trying to find space to get into that backfield play after play after play. And he does not give up on the play after 3 seconds. He's still there. He's running around trying to make progress. Oftentimes he is locked up on a block, almost two gapping. With very long arms, you know, I wouldn't say it happens really often, but when he does get held up, when he gets locked on a rep, he's still trying to make a tackle late on there. Really good first step for a big man, is part of what makes them account for him. He missed 7 tackles this year, which was 26.9%. That is not a good thing. And it's something that's been a problem his whole career at Texas A&M. And it's frankly why I dropped him this far on my list, was I think that's something the Ravens will have a lot of trouble. Also not really polished as a pass rusher. Has some characteristics that project to being a very good pass rusher. First step, arm length, you know, basically the nice leverage that comes with the combination of being only 6'2 with 34-inch arms is a great combination. That is a great combination to carry into the NFL, particularly if you've got some strength to go with that. I think he probably projects as a nose tackle at 326, but you know, maybe some team finds, you know, a move him around use after the Chris Jones has been moved around the way he has. I think other teams are looking to do that more. Matt Epike, certainly the Ravens have done that some with. I would be very, very excited if the Ravens got him late. I think he'd be extreme value in the 5th round if they could get him there. And I think there is a possibility he'll be available there. So, you know, the Ravens should be done, hopefully, with their biggest needs by then. Hopefully, they're not chasing the price down of corners and offensive tackles at that point. And maybe they're looking for a second offensive tackle. Who knows at that point? So I'd understand that pick. But if they're talking about drafting, you know, a safety or McKinley Jackson, I'd be really excited about McKinley Jackson at that point.
So I think for the same reasons as we talked about, he wasn't on my top 10. He did have a little bit more pass rush than I was expecting out of him, actually. But I looked at his athletic profile and I was a little bit scared away looking at his combine numbers. They were pretty poor for the position. You know, I think he came in at 6'1.5", and so that you get that Kelly Gregg type of, like, you know, like spark plug fire hydrant type body type, you know, almost like your Michael Pierce. But you know, the long arms definitely help, I think, give him some upside there. But you know, and the first step quickness, I see that he does move surprisingly well for someone who's his size. I think that I'm looking for athletic upside in a lot of times, especially and not someone that I'm drafting, or someone that I'm drafting later, probably, you know, 4th round or later. I want someone who has kind of the upside from that athleticism instead of someone who's probably on the lower end of the athletic profile. Just because I think there's a little more potential with that. But I think he's someone who could play right away. Like I do think that there is a roster, NFL roster, where he's going to come in and be a player. I see him as more of a rotational kind of like nose tackle type. And there's definitely a role for that in the NFL. I just don't see that kind of like ability to kind of like be like a full-time starter, to be someone who really impacts on passing downs. So to me, that's not someone that I'm that interested in from this position. But I can see why, you know, you would be interested in the immediate ability to come in and play. That is something that I think a lot of teams will want, especially in a class that has a lot of different options and different types of players that you can draft at the position.
Do you have a sense of where he would fall into your value range for the Ravens?
I mean, yeah, for me, like, I think about him in the fifth round, depending on what other players are available, especially at the defensive tackle position, because I think if there's someone for me who's going to be able to offer a little bit more athleticism and pass rush upside, that's where I'd be looking. And that's just the kind of the lens that I'm viewing this class from, because I think those players are there, especially in the back end of this draft.
Okay. All right. Very cool. So lots of difference so far. Let's go on to your number eight player.
My number eight is one of those players who I think has some of that upside. It's a Leonard Taylor out of Miami. He's an interesting player because he's actually did a pretty significant position switch between his last two seasons. I think it was his junior and his senior year, where he played almost entirely the three technique last year. And then this year he played more of the, or maybe he was I think he's a redshirt sophomore actually. So he played more of a three technique. And then this year he was asked to play more, almost all nose. So, you know, being more of like the run defender, you know, and someone who can actually, you know, be impacting the passing game. But if you went back and looked at his, you know, his 2022 season, you know, he was a pretty productive pass rusher in a more limited snap count. So I think you have someone who has that pass rush upside, who has the positional versatility. He has good size at 6'3", 305. He's younger.
22 in May.
Yeah. So I think that, and if you look at like the pass rush, like win rate numbers, he's in the upper echelon of that. So he's definitely someone who isn't as maybe rounded as an overall player. But I think, you know, the upside is there for someone who can develop, continue to, you know, grow into the body a little bit, learn the technique a little bit better. He has the pass rush upside. He can have the, you know, the scheme versatility, I think. And that to me is what I'm looking for, especially in, you know, in the middle of the draft class and around in the fourth, you know, round area. And you've asked for where I would say, for me, he's someone you could take in the end of the fourth round. I'd be happier in the fifth, I think. But I see that there is some, you know, some upside with taking a player like that. If you compare them, like the athletic profile versus the player we just talked about, I think it's kind of like an apples and oranges. And it's really, do you want someone who can come in and play right away and maybe be like a rotational guy? Or do you want someone who maybe develops a year but turns into more of a high-end starter if you give them that time? And I think that's the kind of player that Taylor can be.
Yeah, I completely agree with you in terms of Taylor being 1 year away, and some of it's just the age. But honestly, I had not gotten a birthday on him before, just looked it up, in fact. And that's a major point, is that he is not yet 22. He has a bunch of terrible results on his non-size testing at the combine, or I don't actually know if he did the combine, but I think it was combine. And he did not bench. Okay. And I would kind of expect that out of a lot of 22-year-olds who haven't completely grown into their body yet, which means probably a year in an NFL weight room, the old cliche they say about that. He has some other inconsistencies in his game that are probably removable with good coaching. Playing too high shows up, unexceptional in terms of dictating first contract, making the first strike. And then the missed tackles also, and I don't have a rate for it on here, all reduced his value. But he did have some production as a pass rusher. And what's good about that is he did it despite really not being a polished pass rusher. And so you put him with Chuck Smith. So we always think Chuck Smith is the cure for any known disease to anybody rushes the passer. He can fix him in theory. Certainly is a guy who had upside. I would reset my list probably now that I know his age, but I had him at number 11, and he was a guy I dropped off And I would probably move him up to 9 or 10 now that I know his age. And I whether it's McKinley Jackson or Dwayne Carter who dropped off, I don't even know what I'd do. But in theory, it would be a number 10 guy who would drop off because of that. But certainly an honorable mention, absolutely, for me. I'd be very, very happy to get him in the fifth round.
Yeah, I think that would probably be the sweet spot. And I could see, because of some of the inconsistency in his film, why he would be a player who could drop to that point in the draft. And I think he would be a really good value because of some of the upside. You know, not the best athlete, but he has, you know, some of the length and the size that you're looking for. He has shown the pass rush ability. So, you know, in the right environment with some time to develop, I think he has, you know, the ability to become a nice starter eventually. So yeah, to me, he was someone who has a little bit more upside, but it's really just going to be a matter of, you know, when you're thinking about looking at a player like that. So yeah, I think fifth round pick would probably be the sweet spot for him.
All right. Fair enough. Well, you convinced me on that one. My number eight guy is next, right? Your number eight, right? Okay, my number eight is Brandon Dorlus of Oregon. Now, he's a guy who's included on a lot of edge lists, by the way. And honestly, I think it's better for him if he's considered as a five tech, because you're counterbalancing two things. You're counterbalancing what's the usefulness of a five tech at the NFL level, which is much less, of course, versus how good does he look relative to the edge rushers in a very deep class? And I think he really looks a lot better when compared to the interior defenders, even though that role is clearly less important. He's 6'3", 290. He's a little bit big for playing an edge, although for the edge, but he did play a fair amount. Maybe could play a 4-3 edge in the NFL, but he's not a guy you want dropping to coverage with that kind of size. His snaps were split 253 as a three tech, 159 as four eye, and 160 on the outside. So to me, that's an extremely versatile 3-5 edge player. Not, you don't use him at the nose, but he's a 3-5 or edge player. Great versatility. You know, we get, frankly, Brent Urban gives you a lot of that right now. And if you think back to when Brent Urban was younger, that had a lot of value in particular, still does as a rotational player, but more when he's younger. I thought he played with very heavy hands, which if you have tackles in particular, but it can be guards who extend rather than punch. And so there's some guys who just, they want to play patty cake, and they are devastated by a guy like Dorlus who just knocks hands down, rips guards forward. You know, he's a very effective, heavy-handed player who usually dictates first contact. That if you're short outside linebackers, as both the 2022 and 23 Ravens were, he's a guy you can play as an uncovered end. Now, what do I mean by that? That's when you play your five tech as an end and only have one outside linebacker on the play. And as strange as it seems, Ravens have been in that position where they really needed to rest their outside linebackers for some snaps in games, particularly in the early parts of both those seasons. Before they got Van Noy last year, I don't know if you remember what a mash unit their outside linebacker crew was at the beginning of 22, but they really needed somebody like that who could allow them to play an uncovered end. The 46 pressures in 384 snaps at Oregon is a very fine rate for an interior player. It's okay for an edge. Since he's doing a mix of both, he probably has an advantage in that number, but it's still very good. Three missed tackles. It doesn't look terrible, particularly with his edge time is going to be a little bit higher in terms of missed tackles there. They generally have a little bit higher rate, but he had a fairly low productivity rate in general, only 19 made tackles, and that's not what you want. His run defense is largely about bending the blocker, usually the tackle, sometimes the tight end, to the inside and trying to force the runner inside. But he's not really about making plays. He's a guy who lets other players make the tackle a lot. And what else I have to say about him? Be an interesting choice for the Ravens, because it's kind of a mix of body types player again. I would guess he'll be gone by the time the Ravens pick in round three. And even if they had the pick open, there still may be other needs that trump a pick like Dorlus, who's a, you know, certainly an interesting and versatile player, but doesn't exactly match up with any particularly glaring need at the time.
I don't have too much else to say because I think you covered him pretty well. I had him rated a little bit higher than you. He's number five on my list.
Okay.
And the big reason why is because of the versatility, because of the ability to play inside and outside. I think, you know, if you have him as a stand-up outside linebacker, he has some experience doing that, and he has great size if you're having him out there on the edge. I know, you know, this is a defensive tackle podcast, but I do think the Ravens have potentially a need at the edge. So if they don't like the prototypical edge players in this class, there's a couple of players who can be like the kind of tweener position. And I think Dorlus fits into that role nicely. He has been a, I would say, fairly productive pass rusher. I love just watching him and his movement ability, his quickness off the ball, his ability to do twists and stunts. You know, I can see him with an OA, with him at a BK, that type of athleticism and ability to move can cause a lot of problems for an offensive line. When you have multiple players, you have that kind of versatility to move from gap to gap and do so fluidly. I really like him for that reason. I think if he's there in the third round, I would be happy with that choice. Absolutely. He's a player that I think checks a lot of boxes. And I think he has the versatility to actually bring a lot of value in that position in the draft class, especially if they don't hit on an edge player earlier on. I think he kind of fits both those roles, which is why I'm very high on him.
Okay. Well, fair enough. The Ravens have a lot of needs, so that's high praise indeed still that he'd be a good pick at the end of the third round. And, I, you know, to be honest, I wouldn't be upset. What it means is the Ravens really like him, and they will certainly have interviewed him. They probably like what they think his work ethic will be. They like him from a lot of standpoints and that. But I'll tell you what, if I had to rate one thing about the Ravens that I can't say with any degree of certainty has worked out, it's their interview process. As much as they seem to be looking for the right things, and you hear some great stories about Ozzie Newsome asking about who's holding the clicker and whatnot to determine who's the defensive captain, who's really the leader of a defense when they watch film. That's great stuff. But this is also a group that interviewed Sergio Kindle after he'd had an accident while driving and texting. And this was before the whole fall down the stairs bullshit. This is before they drafted him. They interviewed him about this. And he went up to some whiteboard and gave him this very innocent diagram of the site and whatnot. And they told him it wasn't the right thing. He might have left the scene too, but anyway, he was in an accident while driving and texting. That's bad enough. And he explained the situation, and they were satisfied somehow with that, and ended up drafting the guy anyway. The rest is of course history. Tim Williams they drafted despite red flags that showed up all over the place after that about him. So I like the way they talk about their interview process, and I hope that they can continually improve and tweak that thing. If you go back far enough, you can find some very bad swings and misses on the interview process with the Ravens.
They aren't without blemish in terms of their whole draft process. I know the Ravens have, I think, are historically viewed as a good drafting team, but they've had their ups and downs. You know, it's not been a perfect process by any stretch. There've been a lot of misses, a lot of home runs as well. So I'm not trying to drag them at all, but I think it is a little bit of a guessing game. Nobody has the perfect answer to what to expect out of these players as they make the transition from college to professional. So I tend to say, I think that, players like, Eric DaCosta, he's been in that room in that role for 20 plus years. He probably has a pretty good sense of when he's getting, a load and when it's a real talk and what he can take out of that. So I'm hopeful that, they don't find themselves getting too in love with someone who kind of knows how to talk and doesn't actually back it up. So we'll see how this class goes. I think it's an important class for the Ravens. So I'm hoping they can get some nice picks in the back half that turn around to be, very productive players for them.
All right. Well, tell you what, let's go to your number seven pick, and then we'll cut it off and we'll come back and we'll finish up. So your number seven guy is who?
So my number seven guy is probably the most fun / difficult name you'll ever see. Ruke Ohororo. Am I saying that correctly?
Ohororo.
Ohororo.
Oh, row, row, row your boat. Ohororo.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but it's Ruke also.
Ruke. Yeah. Ruke Ohororo. He's a really interesting player to me. A lot of the things that I've been looking for in terms of like athleticism, you know, size, physicality. I feel like he is very much a player that needs to develop still. He has a lot of kind of potential there when you see flashes of him going, oh wow, like that was really impressive play that he just did. And then there's like stretches where you're like, I'm not seeing what someone like with his caliber of like physicality and athleticism, it's just not there. So like, is he taking plays off? Is he not engaged? Is he mentally not there? Is he getting worn down like physically? I'm not really sure. I think he's worth, you know, the upside just from the sheer athleticism and from the flashes that you see from him, but can he be more consistent, both, you know, against the run and against the pass? That's the real question. So, you know, the physical profile is pretty much all he needs to get drafted, I think. And it's really there in spades. Kind of ideal size, 6'4", 295 pounds. Like he really kind of fits that mold. But for someone who is as athletic as he tested, the ability to win against the pass was not there as much as you'd like. You know, he did have a decent number of sacks, which you like to see. So the pass rush production was pretty good. But I think that you kind of wanted to see a little bit more out of him. You just had some games where it just looks like he wasn't really that invested. I think he's pretty much just your three technique. So he's a little bit more pigeonholed in that position. I don't think he has really much opportunity to kind of play more of a run defense oriented position, like a nose technique or nose tackle. So that's very specific for him. Can he develop into becoming a more rounded player potentially? I think you're just a bet on the upside. And that's why I have him at seven. I think if you're just looking at his physical profile, you might consider him to be like a top three player, but there's just not that consistency on the film.
All right. I had him at number three, in fact. So a guy I really like, and man, we've had a lot of these. That's okay. This is exactly why we do these shows, and that's a lot of fun. 6'4", 294, 34-inch arms, 489, 40, 29 bench again with 34-inch arms. He and Jenkins are the two guys with the matching numbers there, and you know I love that. He won't be 23 until October. So again, one of the younger players in the group. You know, he when he's a run defender, he looks like a lot like a two-gap player who wins with kind of pad level and leverage, I would say. So he gets low despite being 6'4", probably mostly due to his length. And he can do some things, by the way. He can get violent with a guard who's leaning back at him just as hard, and he can pull him right down. Watch a good cut-up of him versus UNC that includes a lot of stunts. And it was probably 40% stunts as a percentage of pass plays, and mostly with Rook as the under. To me, that's where he will make his money in the NFL. He will be a devastating underneath player. And what fits really for that is the 34-inch arms against most centers, much longer than almost any NFL center. I think Lloyd Cushenberry is the longest. He's right around 34 inches, but everybody else is shorter, and some are much shorter because they're kind of forced into the position because of arm length. And they're good offensive linemen who are otherwise forced into the position. A guy like that is going to dictate first contact, crossing the face of the guard. And if he's quick, is going to cause incredible problems for a player like, say, Linderbaum. Even though he doesn't have the exceptional size of some of the guys who've given Linderbaum trouble straight up, I think Linderbaum would be in a better position there. Linderbaum would have trouble dealing with the half man effect of a player like Rook could throw on him. I did notice in the UNC game that he's really frequently latched on inside by the UNC players. That's not impressive given his length. He should be a much better hand fighter, be able to do that. But then again, that's upside. That's value yet to be harvested. And he's been effective as he has at the college level with basically not being a particularly polished player. And that includes the pass rush as well. He did had a sack where he beat a double from left guard and center, then bowled the center alone. I love to see that. Any kind of starting from a double team, even if you move to single and then beat it for a sack, is great. It was a disengaging. He disengaged from the center effectively and cleaned up. There's a fair amount of that in Ororo's game, is that he's cleaning up. We, of course, benefited from that from Justin Madubuike last year. It's not a bad thing, but you do have to somebody get initial pressures, and he's less of that guy right now. He also had a very late hit on the quarterback, which was flagged for roughing the passer. That was a bad thing. That was actually in the Georgia Tech game, so a different game. But anyway, it was what it was. Needs to improve his hand and arm usage. Needs to be much more of a first striker with that kind of length. And again, Chuck Smith, just throw that name out there. He's been primarily a three tech, but he's moved around to nose tackle and outside. So he's played all over the place. And he's one of the guys, and we've mentioned this in a couple of places. Chris Jenkins was one, and trying to remember the others, but there have been multiple guys in the top 10 who were moved around by defensive coordinators trying to show a different look to offenses and trying to get them to work out different pass blocking routines and then see what was working. Just continually probing the defense, which is the offensive line in this case, to find out where your weaknesses are and how you want to attack them. So I like that about him, but he was definitely the guy they were trying to move around to make things happen. I think he would make sense for the Ravens or virtually any other NFL team that plays rotationally, but he may be a luxury the Ravens can't afford, even if he were to last to the end of round two, which I'm not convinced he will. So I think he may get drafted earlier in round two with the combination of things he has, and that probably means the Ravens can't get him. If he's there in round three and the Ravens haven't, even if the Ravens have moved back to get there to the middle of round three, say, be very excited about the pick. If he would end around three, I'd be jumping out of my chair, excited about the pick. But anyway, he's a guy I really liked in this, and he was my number three overall guy.
I mean, I completely understand why you have him that high, because the physical tools are all there. The size, the strength, the athleticism. He has some very impressive plays. I describe it as flashes, you know, when everything's kind of like working together, it's like, oh, wow, that's a player that can be an impactful NFL player. I just didn't see the consistency. So it's a little bit of a gamble. Like, why is that not there? So it kind of gets back to the question about, you know, that interview process. Is there something that's going on where he's not reaching his potential? It's hard for me to say. I think the upside is clearly there. I agree with you. He's probably gone in the second round. I don't think I would take him in the second. I would absolutely take him in the third round because of the upside. And maybe he does fall for reasons that we don't know. But I think he's a player that you have to kind of like bring in and develop. He's someone who's going to take some time. So that's the hesitation there a little bit if you're taking somebody that high, given the Ravens, you know, other needs. So I understand, you know, he's a really intriguing player. I know some people I like who I trust their opinions are very high on him, yourself included. And I just couldn't quite put him over some other players I thought were a little bit more ready in the higher end for me.
All right. Well, very cool. I think it's the outstanding start to this, and it's just the kind of thing we like where there's a lot of difference of opinion. We've named, I think, seven players so far, but I think we've actually named most of the players that are going to be on the top 10 list for either of us. So we'll cut it off there. We'll come back. We'll do my number seven pick. But I want to thank you for coming on, for starters, and ask you to tell people where they can find work you do online or talk to you if they want just football there.
Yeah, I would say the best way to find me is just Twitter. At Gabe Fergie is my handle. Right now I'm very much into the Orioles season. you know, I'm excited about, you know, the young birds, but you know, the draft is right around the corner. So, as we get closer to that, I'm also probably going to be talking more and more about these players because it's a big draft for the Ravens. And I love talking about the draft. It's one of my favorite things about the NFL season, especially NFL offseason. So, yeah, that's the best way to get in touch with me.
For the Orioles fans out there, are you pissed off about the Austin Hayes, Colton Cowser non-platoon at this point?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you need to have at least give Cowser an opportunity with Hayes kind of just in a massive slump. Like, if Hayes is hitting, I understand, but he's not. So, yeah, you got to give the young guy a chance.
Yeah, we've talked about that in this program. I don't want to do it, but I'm glad to hear you're in the same spot here. I think they're going to face three right-handers against the Red Sox. I might be wrong about that. There might be a left-hander that the Red Sox have got that they're starting, but I think it's three righties because all they have is righties in their rotation. And I would really like to see Cowser get three straight starts the next 3 days. So we're recording this on Monday night, the 9th. We'll probably be disappointed and the lineup will come out and Hayes will be in left field right off the bat and be another teeth gnasher. Other folks out there, if you want to be on a film study short, hit me up. Topics are wide open during the off season, so just hit me up with what your thought is. Anything you're passionate about is important. That's the key. We have an interesting, engaging discussion. That's what we're looking for, to provide content and an open microphone for the community, which has been so loyal. If you want to do something for the show, write us a 5-star review. That'd be great if you could do that. It starts the search engines working and looking for our stuff. But it's just also nice to have something specific said out there about the show that you like is always nice. A 50-word review, something like that. Nothing you should be taking a lot of time on. If you want to do a show on a recollections, picking a player from the Ravens of history that you want to talk about, I'd love to do that with you as well. Just tell me the name so I can reserve it for you, and I'll get back to you and schedule the show for after the draft. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken. It's always a pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.